Welcome to the latest podcast from the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery, brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're going to start out with a little store news, a little what's happening around town, what's happening in the hobby. We got a question recently.
Yeah, we got it through. If you ever want to ask us questions, you can send them to the email address podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com. And this one is a bit of an interesting one. Somebody asked us to do an episode on brackish tanks, and I really thought it through, and I'm like, can we talk for an hour on brackish tanks? And I'm not sure I can.
I think we could, but we'd spend a lot of time talking people out of brackish.
Yeah, that's what it is to me. It's just as complicated to maintain as saltwater, but you can keep less things.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I think, view brackish as kind of like the halfway point between freshwater and saltwater. And I'm like, chemically, that's true, but practically, from an aquarius standpoint, that means that you can do neither system.
Right. You can do less in a brackish system. And to me, the biggest challenge with brackish water tanks is the three or four really common brackish water fish, or fish that are sold as brackish water fish, get way too large for the average home aquarist. Monos, scats, and Colombian hyphen bull sharks are all
right.
big fish. So to keep those commonly available brackish water fish, 180 or larger.
Yeah, and even some of the smaller stuff, like the dragon gobies and the puffers that are brackish, there are plenty of freshwater alternatives that you can still grow plants.
Yeah.
Or marine alternatives where you can have corals.
Right. Yeah, true.
A little bumblebee goby tank is a pretty cool little nano system that you could do pretty realistically brackish. Set it up like a normal non-planted freshwater aquarium and put some salt in it. And for something like bumblebee goby, it'd work just fine.
Yeah, I think so. There's nothing wrong with it, but you're not going to be able to use any of those standards that we use for saltwater or freshwater. So you do kind of have to plow your own trail a little bit if you do brackish.
Yeah. I think maybe that's something we save for a YouTube video where
that's
we talk
idea.
About here's a realistic brackish water aquarium. It's not saltwater light. That's probably the biggest takeaway.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like it. Well, if anybody else has questions that they want us to answer at the beginning of these, just send us a message, and we will be doing some discussion on Facebook after we post these. So if you want to talk about what we're talking about in this episode, look for that post, and that'll be the place where we can all chat a little bit, and you can let us know what you think, what we said wrong, all that stuff. Cool.
Store news, I guess.
Store news.
The biggest thing, I think, is we're getting that saltwater coral table set up now.
That's very exciting. I can't wait to hear that. And that's kind of the perfect segue into what the topic of the podcast is today.
True.
What was holding us up so long?
Yeah. Any other news we got to go over before we get into this?
I think that's about it. The breeding lab and the biotope sections are coming along.
Expect videos on those in the not too distant future, but yeah. We're making headway towards being able to produce content in those regions of the store.
And the plant propagation area is
true.
We are making strides there, and there's some pretty exciting things happen there. So come down to the gallery and check those things out. We will give you a tour.
Yeah, there's a lot going on below the surface.
Yes. Well said. I like that.
Ooh, no.
All right. We're not going to start getting snobby about puns now, are we? Because it's too late for that.
No, I'm a terrible punner, but
I like funny punnies. I know. I had to go there. So today, we are going to be talking about aquarium lighting. That's a really big topic.
It is. And one that is scary. I'm a little scared of it.
Are you?
I mean, lighting is one of those subjects where we've said this a lot about a lot of things, but where it's difficult to understand, but it's easy to use. You know, I have lights that I know I like, but I don't know that I know well enough how they work and why.
That's fair.
And I think it's also, at least for me, it's an intimidating topic because it's very hard in a lot of cases to convince someone that this $150 light is objectively better than anything that they're going to use from a hardware store that costs like 10 bucks.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a good point too. So
we should probably
it?
Start out by talking about why do we use a light? Like, what's the point of it? And it's multifaceted.
At the base level, it's you spent money on these things. You want to see them.
And so I'm glad you brought up that $10 light from the hardware store. There's no, I mean, there are reasons why it's not the best choice, but if that light lights up those things you like so you can see them, and those things aren't dependent on that light for survival, and you like the way they look under that light, it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as you're willing to accept that there may be some consequences, such as algae or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. But that doesn't mean necessarily that your tank is unhealthy. It's just your tank will have algae in it. Yeah.
So for aquarium lights, the first step is lighting stuff up so it looks pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a different thing for freshwater than it is for saltwater.
Yeah, I recently got on that topic because I had to write that one YouTube video where I was talking about light spectrums and like why is a saltwater aquarium lit differently than a freshwater aquarium and why you shouldn't use one for the other.
Right. It's an overwhelming topic because there are so many choices out there on what, so many options for what light you can put on your aquarium. And I think that can be the overwhelming part. So what we had to do here as a team is just, we tried a few. We definitely haven't tried all of them. And focus on the ones that seem to work for us. And it's definitely a different group of lights for different purposes.
Yeah. Lighting is most crucial when it comes to growing the photosynthetic organisms that we want to survive. And it's really hard for us as humans, mammals, animals to be like, oh yeah, this thing can eat that in some way that I, you know, just know in my head. So yeah. Like we get into conversations all the time where people will be like, well, can LEDs really grow coral? And light is light if it's the correct bright intensity, yeah, color, and it grows it, you know, it can, yeah, still use it in the same way no matter what the source, yeah, of light is. And that just is kind of a what?
We have definitely converted over completely to LEDs. If we've got a straggler fluorescent around, it's because we needed to throw something on a tank for a little while.
African cichlid tanks.
Down in the basement where no one can see it.
Yeah.
But by far, LEDs have come far enough that I cannot think of a single situation where there's a better alternative to an LED.
Yeah, that's not to say that fluorescents don't grow, because they do and they can, but there are enough drawbacks from them. The thing to me is just that it doesn't last.
Right.
You've got to replace that bulb at least once a year, but by the time you do, it's already started to degrade, and you're getting less than you did when you started.
It was amazing back when we were lighting reef tanks with four, what were called high-output T5 bulbs. If anybody's not familiar with those, they're the really skinny little bulbs that come in all kinds of different colors. I think on a 4-foot tank, it's a 54 watt bulb. So you'd have a little over 200 watts for four bulbs on a 75 gallon tank. And it was always amazing to me when I would look at my tank and I would look at the bulbs and think, you know, those are getting to be about a year old, but it seems bright. And then I'd do the responsible thing and I would go buy a new set of bulbs, and you only wanted to replace them one at a time because of the dramatic change. It's amazing how you have no concept of that tank getting darker until you swap a bulb out.
Humans are terrible at gauging light.
Right.
We can read, yeah, color pretty darn well, but intensity, I don't think so. A white light always looks brighter than a blue light, no matter how bright it is.
Right. And it all depends on what the ambient light in the room is like. You know, picture on a sunny day walking into a dark hallway. And then 2 hours later, walking down that same hallway, and it's not dark anymore.
Yeah, we were just talking about that book that I picked up at an antique store from the 50s, Aquarium Care book by Axelrod. And the really notable difference to me was that when it came to lighting, and they were growing plants back then, it, yeah, was what distance should your tank be from the window to get enough light to grow your plants? And that's just such a different style that man, I didn't even consider that. Well, yeah. No, you didn't have a compact fluorescent bulb to put on this tank or an LED or really anything that was designed to do that at that time.
The color of the bulbs were pretty much all the same color.
Yeah.
So that's a great segue into talking about color.
Right.
So color of light is measured in something called color temperature or degrees Kelvin. So when you pick up a bulb or you pick up a fixture and it says on there 12K or 6500K or 18,000K.
Well, 18,000 sounds like a lot more than 6500.
Right. So it must be really bright. No, it has nothing to do with brightness. It is only about the color of the light coming out of the fixture. So that's set up on a Kelvin scale based on the color of magnesium burned at a certain temperature. It's simply a scale. It has nothing to do with heat, nothing to do with brightness. So if you burn magnesium, pure magnesium, at 12,000 degrees Kelvin, it's a different color than if you burn magnesium at 6,500 degrees Kelvin.
It just seems so...
Yeah. Well, they had to come up with some kind of a standard.
How else would you measure it? But it still feels really arbitrary. But that's a good way to look at. And it's an average, essentially, right?
It is, yeah.
So even just knowing the number doesn't necessarily tell you what's going on specifically in that.
Right. So 6,500K is approximately daylight at around noon on a sunny day. A warm, what we would consider a warm fixture is going to be about 4,000. A classic old-fashioned incandescent bulb, like a normal, I'm not paying attention to anything, those are burning at around 2,400.
Yeah. Charles, do you want to kind of summarize summarize what you came up with for the video about how that relates to where those organisms are found?
Yeah. So light spectrums used in the typical reef aquarium versus a planet aquarium are very different because a coral reef is in much deeper water than the average aquatic plant.
Right.
So if you look at an average reef aquarium, you're going to see a lot of blue. And that's because blue penetrates deepest in water. So corals are very good at using blue light. And then you look at a planet aquarium and you're definitely going to be seeing a lot more red in that spectrum. And a big deal about that is red light is basically almost entirely gone in the first 10 feet and then is 100% gone by the first like 30 feet.
Right. It's interesting when you look at something like a lionfish, which we perceive as being a red and white fish. If you see those deeper than 30 feet of water, they're a black and white fish.
Yeah, I've been watching the Nautilus live streams, and on that deep sea submersible, they've got stripes on it that are red, green, and blue. And I've got to imagine that that's for a visual representation of the depth that they're at.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty neat.
I like it.
But that's also why our corals fluoresce so much in those bright blue. That's why, you know, the actinic lights that are bright blue, they kind of simulate that deep water environment where the corals are going to be fluorescing a little bit more.
Right. And then it's a usable light to the coral. And so the coral reacts to that light. If you shine a red light on most corals, it's going to make the coral look dull.
Yeah.
If you shine a blue light on coral that has what are called GFPs or green fluorescent pigments, that blue light is going to excite those pigments and it's going to make it look like it's a neon light plugged in.
Yeah. It's not an optical illusion. It's actually the color of the animal.
It's the pigment reacting to blue light.
I think the other side of that we need to talk about is the things that can't use that light as well, which would be algaes.
Yes.
Yeah. So it also helps limit that a little bit too.
Yeah. Blasting red light into your coral reef is a great way to grow aquatic algaes because I shouldn't specify here. So marine and aquatic actually mean two different things. Marine is saltwater, aquatic is freshwater. So marine algaes, let me correct myself there, typically are only found in the first few feet of water. So if you're blasting red light, you're simulating shallow water, as in you're making prime algae habitat.
Yeah, in a similar way that's a little bit more prime habitat for our shallow freshwater plants.
Yes, and that works in a freshwater planet aquarium because freshwater plants are a great competitor for resources for algae. You don't really have a comparable organism in marine aquariums unless you're working with macroalgae, but people aren't doing that in their displays. Typically, they're doing that in their refugiums.
Yeah, and if you are trying to promote that, then you're not promoting as much coral growth anyway because it grows much faster than a lot of corals.
Right.
Cool. I think that's... Do we have anything more on spectrum? Intensity, to me, is the more confusing one.
Intensity is a big one.
I know, but it's something I know little about. Yeah. I trust the brands that I know grow plants well, so I don't think as much about it.
And I grew up in the era of reef keeping where it was, how can we get more light? How can we get more light? How
right.
can we get more light? And we would do all these kinds of crazy things to push as much light as possible into our reef tanks, knowing that a lot of the times it just wasn't enough.
Right.
Acropora corals were very, very difficult to keep in the 80s and 90s because, well, there were lots of reasons, but a lot of it was we just couldn't get enough light to those corals that live in 6, 8, 10 inches of water in the ocean.
Metal halides were the big game changer on
metal
that, right?
Metal halides were a game changer. And a 400-watt metal halide was what you needed to grow some of those corals.
Metal halides are something that should not be underestimated under any circumstances. I've been sunburned by those things, so let's just let's just throw that out there.
Yeah, they do make me appreciate the nice, cool LEDs.
Right.
Which has to be a big part of why we don't need big chillers on a lot of reef tanks now.
That's made a huge difference. If you could imagine a 180-gallon aquarium that's designed to grow Acropora corals, that's going to have 300-400-watt metal halide bulbs on that tank. 1,200 watts of light on top of all the other stuff that we hit in there. You couldn't keep that tank without a chiller.
That was a type of system that, like, you walk into the room and you know that there are metal halides in there. Yeah. Like, once you've been around enough of them, you're just like, oh, they got metal halides in here.
Maybe we should talk about wattage then, since you just mentioned it. There are a couple of different ways to measure intensity, right? Wattage, PAR, what do those different things mean, and how does that relate to how much light is actually going in there?
So PAR is a measure of photosynthetically active radiation. Essentially, how good does that light promote photosynthesis?
Okay.
When we're measuring that in a reef tank, the PAR meter needs to be calibrated for the blue light because it does change it. And the blue light is actually more effective. PAR meters were originally developed by the horticulture industry. And so in greenhouses, you could set PAR based on the screening and the placement of plants and the direction, all kinds of things to make sure that when you were growing your tomatoes to sell to wherever you were going to sell your tomato plants to, you were getting the best light you could get. So that's originally how they were developed. So they were developed for terrestrial plants. The PAR meter can adapt a little better to aquatic plants that tend to grow in corals, but there's some calibration things that have to happen for a PAR meter to really give you an accurate reading on a reef tank. But they can do that. They're particularly useful in comparing. So the new latest and greatest LEDs for reef tanks have all of these amazing controls, controlling the intensity of each individual color.
That can be very overwhelming.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Fortunately, they all come with a, hey, I don't really know anything. I want to just growth mode. Click, and you can click at growth mode. Hey, I don't really know anything, but I want the color of light that's going to bring out the best colors in my coral. Click. You can also go to expert level and say, I want to have my blues at 97%. I want to have my dark blues at 92% and fade them in, fade them out, do all kinds of things like that. It's useful when you're it was really useful to have a PAR meter when we started out switching over to LED lights because we could turn the halides on, use the PAR meter to measure the intensity at different depths, switch on the LEDs, take off the halides, and then match those PAR readings.
So the main usefulness for PAR then is just to get a known value to compare to, essentially.
I wouldn't say that's the main. I would say that's one of the uses.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of the uses. And a properly calibrated PAR meter, you can tell exactly what kind of light you're getting, if you're getting enough light down to your corals.
Okay.
Yeah. They're cool.
Yeah. But I guess a typical person who's just walking into a store and looking for a light, they're not going to have access to that data. I think mainly what they're going to know is wattage.
Yeah, I'm curious about that because I've never actually looked into it, but I imagine a watt of fluorescent is very different than a watt of LED.
It is it's a completely different thing. And unfortunately, when we were talking about fluorescent lights, the intensity from a 54 watt high output T5, whether it was one company or another company, whether it was a bluish one or a whitish one, the intensity was the same.
Okay.
Right? With an LED, a 1 watt or 2 watt or 3 watt LED chip can put out a different kind of intensity than a different one. So if you look at an LED fixture and it says it's a 26 watt LED fixture, that's giving you a little bit of an idea of what kind of light it's putting out, but it's not, you're not getting the whole story there.
Okay.
A 126 watt LED fixture can have a completely different intensity than a different 26 watt LED fixture.
So how can a listener to this episode, let's say, walk into a fish store, go up to their lighting section with 20 different LED options? Some of them play music. Some of them yeah. do crazy things. Some of them are controllable. Some of them are pure white. Some of them are $300. Some of them are $50. How do you know what to pick?
That's a tough question.
Yeah, that's the hard question. Right. That's why lighting is so overwhelming. It is. There's so many numbers and pictures, and everybody says, no, this works. No, you can just buy the cheapest thing on Amazon. No, you can just go to the hardware store. And how do you sift through that? I don't know.
Well, one of the ways to sift through is a lot of the quality lights. Well, I'm going to say one thing first. When it comes to LEDs, you get what you pay for.
Yeah. I'm only laughing because I can think of several scenarios where I tried to convince someone not to buy something online.
Yep.
And they came back like 6 months later and said, it's dead already.
Right. Quality. So duration, how long is that fixture going to last? Does that fixture do what it says it's going to do? Can it maintain what it says it's going to do? So those diodes, if they're not powered correctly, those diodes will degrade, and they'll degrade pretty quickly. When you look at one of the really good quality LED brands, like an Ecotec, we'll just say the top three brands that we really like around here, which is the Radeon from Ecotec, the Hydra from Aqua Illumination, and just about anything Kessel does.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When you look at that fixture, more than 3/4 of that fixture is a heat sink.
Yeah, that's right? True.
Heat sink means it pulls the heat away from the LED. Keeps that LED cool, which makes it last longer and produce the color of light it's supposed to produce. Heat sinks are heavy. These lights are all shipped overseas.
Right.
It costs a lot to ship something heavy.
We filmed that. I'm just going to comment on that. Yeah. We filmed that Radeon video earlier today. Like, I work with aquarium lights.
Yeah.
I was still shocked how heavy that package was.
Yeah.
It's a heavy light because of the heatsink.
Yeah.
So the cheap LEDs that you can buy online, the black boxes, you'll notice those are a lot lighter.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They are not going to pull the heat away like one of the good quality LED fixtures is going
to. Well, one thing I do know about LEDs is it is fairly simple tech to work with. As in, anybody who has a soldering iron can link two LED bulbs together and they'll turn on.
Right.
So I guess construction is what would make the big difference.
Construction
yeah.
makes a huge difference. Right. Yep.
Both in terms of how it will last and going for simplicity in a known brand, that's those true lumens that we love. They're stripped down. They are a strip of bright, solid LEDs that just work.
Hooked up to a heatsink.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole fixture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're not expensive, but you're still getting exactly what you pay for. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the extra money in lights goes to reliability and tech, which
bells
is
and whistles.
Yeah, connectivity, yeah. And stuff that is really fun to have and can actually make your display look a lot better, but
right.
not necessarily the actual bulbs themselves.
It's kind of fun to talk about those bells and whistles, though. And,
they are.
And they do things like thunderstorm or lightning storms and fade in and fade out and automatically adjust for certain color situations. For example, I know it's a little cheesy, but around Christmas time, we make a lot of our programmable LEDs turn green and red during yeah. the Christmas holidays for a couple of hours because it's fun. And so somebody said, but do you really need that or is it just cool? And my response to that was very simple. Do you really need an aquarium or is it just cool?
That's hard to beat.
So if you think all of those techie things are cool, then you need them for your aquarium.
They're yes. worth the money if you're yeah. going to use them.
If you think it's cool.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and there are some practical benefits to it. That's been my perspective. And I got a Freshwater AI Prime for Christmas. And if I had chosen it myself, maybe I would have gone with a Kessel, but my husband bought it for me and everything in our home is connected. We just bought a house and smart switches are getting put in every light switch. And I didn't think that I was going to care, but there's a lot of extra features I can get out of it because I can have my display looking the way I want it to look when I'm looking at it the most, which is a nice warmer white color, but I can also pump in the stuff that helps my plants grow better at different times, which would be those reds that we were talking about. And it doesn't always look pretty when it looks like that, but I don't care what it looks like at 1 p.m. I care what it looks about. Yeah, because I'm stuck here looking at these tanks here, whatever. The same for our coral tanks, right?
Yeah.
We pump in those blues later in the day. Not every coral looks great under bright blues, but it does help those more fluorescent corals fluoresce more of the time, even when it's not bright blue. So there are some practical benefits to that. Plus, it's just really cool technology.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is fun enough on its own.
Right. All right, so we've talked about...
I just had a thought. Sorry.
Yeah.
I will throw out there, though, that there is a strong economic benefit to shelling out, quote unquote, for a light fixture. Because I will adamantly argue that there a lot of these light fixtures, you're spending about $100 on longevity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like a good light, depending on how many, because most of the LED lights these days are rated by hours that they're on versus other things, at least the ones I've been looking into. Yeah. Depending on how many hours in the day you have them on, you could realistically have one of these bulbs for like 3 to 5 years. So like, think about that when you're purchasing it, because that extra investment in money means you can put off thinking about it again for a while.
Yeah. I think the twin stars that we've just got kind of split the best of both worlds when it comes to both simplicity and technology, where they are more expensive, but they don't necessarily put that extra money into tech, like connectivity and stuff like that. That just goes into more, bigger, better, brighter bulbs.
And good Lord. Like I mentioned earlier that like the human eye is terrible at judging brightness. You know, with these lights.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You turn those on and you're like, oh. Yeah.
And it's beautiful light.
Yeah, it is.
It's not just bright. It's light that feels like it's a good color.
Yeah. And it makes your everything look better. The fish look better. Having those, I mean, a fish that we all just know back to front, neon and cardinal tetras. And we've got those under the twin stars now, and those things glow constantly. It right. makes a difference.
I have specifically started stocking those fish in those tanks because of those lights.
Yeah. And what they did was say, okay, what spectrum makes all these things look better? And that all the money that you're spending goes directly into that, and you can tell.
They don't even have a switch.
Nope. It's just lights.
Plug it into a timer. That's it. It's not going to fade in and fade out. You're not going to get that golden sunlight look at dawn or dusk. It's going to turn on. It's going to turn off. But wow, is it going to grow plants and make them look gorgeous.
I have never seen Glosso grow as well as it does under that twin star.
It's lush. Crazy. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did the experiment, and there's a YouTube video where we did the comparison of the twin star versus the fluval plant, which, by the way, another great high quality light.
Yeah, I love it.
The fluval plant 3.0, we use those quite a bit around here. If you want that tech and that connectivity, it's a great way to go. And they're similarly priced lights for the base model twin star versus the fluval 3.0.
Yeah. You just got to decide where you want your money to go. Yeah.
If you want the connectivity and you want the control, you want to make it look golden at certain times of the day and really bright at other times of the day, the fluval planted 3.0 does a great job at that.
Yeah,
and it grew the Glosso just fine.
It did. Not nearly as much.
Oh, man.
But the other factor for a connected light is it can grow with you. As in, right. You don't always need the brightest light. There are tanks that if we threw that twin star on, they would look terrible. They would be full of algae. It's not the right light for everything. Mm-hmm. But if you're starting with just a sand bottom tank with Anubias, and well, then you can have a connected light, start it low. And if you want to go for more, you don't have to upgrade.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's sort of how I've been pitching those to some people who I know want to get into it, but just aren't ready to take the big step yet.
Yep.
Actually, Charles told me that. That was his idea. I should give credit.
Okay, so our top picks for planet aquariums. The current True Lumens are a good... I'm going to grow some simple plants.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need tech. I want them to turn on and off.
Best lights for a rack of tank, too, yes. Because you can split multiple on the same power supply.
The Fluval Planted 3.0. Mm-hmm.
I love them.
I want to get a little more into this. But I want some connectivity and some controllability.
Yeah.
And I want to grow better plants. Fluval Planet 3.0. I want to have an amazing, tip-top, so cool, the best planet aquarium I can possibly do. Twin Star.
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue that. I will argue.
Oh, there is one
yeah,
other.
Yeah,
there's one other mention.
Not going to let us get away with
no,
one.
I was like, don't you dare.
So another, there's one other LED company that has kind of taken a different approach, and where all of these, many of these LED companies are doing this broad, let's spread this light out as much as we can. Kessel goes for that point source illumination. One of the things we used to have with metal halide bulbs, because it was a point source illumination, is that shimmer.
Yeah.
And that shimmer was really, really cool and very, very natural looking.
Mm-hmm.
If you spread that light out like a fluorescent or like the new, the twin stars or the new radions, that light is spread out. You don't get that point source. You get very little to no shimmer. The point source illumination coming out of a Kessel, you get the shimmer.
And I love the shimmer.
I think Kessel corners the market on the most natural looking light out of the box. They don't let you choose from a lot of spectrums. Right. You pretty much get, freshwater more or less golden, saltwater more or less blue.
Yep.
And it looks like sunlight. It looks natural to me.
Yeah. I am dead set on when I finally get around to upgrading the lights on my current tanks, I will be getting Kessels.
I can't decide if I would go Twin Star or Kessel. I would probably go Twin Star unless it was a deep tank. That point source illumination just drives light down deep. If you want to light a deep tank, put a Kessel on it. You can, in 30 inches, you could easily grow something that really needs a highlight because of that, the intensity and that point source of that Kessel.
But I also think for more low-tech tanks, the visual appeal of a spotlit tank, I think is way underrated, where you get, and we just did talk to Robbie about this, he's doing this in his biotope, where you get that shaft of light look.
Yeah.
And for a heavily planted tank even, you can have brighter color in the center and have it fade out to dimmer color on the edges. That's really cool.
For me, it's such a natural look because, like, you think about like a river or stream. It doesn't have light covering every inch of that.
The sun is point source illumination.
Yeah. And there are trees and things in the way. And right. I just love that. The ability to replicate that look is just so, just, it really works for me.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. I think people who don't do planted tanks tend to cheap out on lights a little bit, and for good reason, right? They don't really need that much.
Yeah.
But think about like a South American cichlid tank with driftwood and that kind of intense light coming through. They can flash in it the way that they would naturally. Mm-hmm. They can angle themselves to make the most of the light when they want to or not. And it's beautiful.
Yep.
I have a thought of like a Kessel light being used for like a blind cave tetra biotope, just because, I mean, in that type of environment, you're not getting a lot of light, but what light you would get would be very localized.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Like in a longer tank, but just over a little part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That just enough to light the darker parts and make it look cave-like.
Yeah.
Cool.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. That sounds really awesome. See, we're talking ourselves into plenty of ideas. Right?
So the big ones we'd use for a reef tank. If you're going basic, a white and a blue light from the current True Lumen, you're doing low light corals, you want to keep it easy, you want to keep it simple, it'll do just fine for you.
Even for fish only, that extra blue pop, it makes a difference.
Definitely.
The fish color will stand out, and I would say that about African cichlid tanks as well.
Oh, adding that blue on African cichlids is a good touch.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll throw this out here. It's almost like reef fish and African cichlids come from deeper water than most aquarium fish. So they're meant to shimmer in that kind of light.
Right.
And they do.
They do. So the next step above the current, I would go right back to the fluval. The fluval marine and sea for easy corals, basic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a little bit of controllability. They're pretty cool lights.
Some of the fun features of feeling like your reef is a little more of a higher end reef, because it does, if you have controllable lights, it makes a difference.
And it can grow a lot of the really cool corals. You know, we don't, I think that's one of the perceptions out there, that if you want this amazing reef tank, you have to grow highlight corals. Hammers, frog spawns, anchors, mushroom corals, a lot of zoanthids, they just don't need that much light. They can do just fine.
No, there's lower light. Plenty you could get away with the True Lumens. I mean, a ton of lights.
Mm-hmm. Especially in a shallower tank.
Yeah.
As you get bigger, your lights also should get bigger. Now, all of the big light companies, Kessel, Aqua Illumination, and Nikotech, they all have smaller versions of their lights. But for those companies, it's not a lower end version. It's just smaller.
Yeah.
Less intensity. And Kessel does it with their A80s, their 160s, and their 360s. Ecotech does it with their XR15s to their XR30s. I feel like there's one other Ecotech. No, maybe there's just two.
I don't know.
And
that
then Aqua Illumination does it with the Prime, the Hydra 32, and the Hydra 64.
I really think the Prime is a little bit underrated just because it's not that expensive and it does put out a lot.
It's a great little nano light for sure. Yeah. So the difference between those three lights, and I think there's really good applications for all three of those lights. Kessel's, shimmer, and driving light deep.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat that.
Yeah.
Yep. They don't have as much controllability. You can get a spectral controller that'll change and adjust it for you and automate it a bit, but you can't automate and adjust every single individual channel.
Yeah.
They're amazing lights, and they're going to last a long time.
Yeah, and Kessel kind of tells you they know better.
They kind of do that, yeah.
And they kind of do. Right. Like, you only get the stuff that's going to grow corals. You don't get anything other than that. And I appreciate that a little bit.
I
kind
of do too, yeah. To me, the ones that I tend to move the most of are the Aqua Illumination Hydra 32s. It was the 26s, now the 32s. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the right balance between it's going to grow lots of stuff, it's going to have all kinds of control, and the control is pretty easy to understand.
Yeah, that is a big factor in this. Some of those just are baffling. I mentioned the old Ecotex where you have to plug it into the computer, and that's not fair because they were kind of the first ones doing that stuff.
Yeah.
But
they're way too complicated. They were
so
way too complicated.
Hard to use.
The new Mobius app, I haven't gotten to play with it yet, but we're gonna. Allegedly, the new Mobius app that makes the Ecotex way more user friendly. I always described the two as Mac versus PC.
Yeah, I could see
and
that.
A Hydra, way more Mac brain type person.
Yeah.
And an Ecotec, way more PC brain type person.
I could definitely see that. I can't articulate why that's correct, but I probably agree with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So for a basic mixed reef, the Hydra 32HD is my pick. If your goal is SPS corals and clams, the Radions are absolutely amazing lights. One of the tanks that I take care of is full of acros and Monopora digitata and a couple of other really fast-growing corals. The tank is 28 inches deep. He's got clams on the bottom of the tank that are thriving with the Radion XR 30 Pros.
That's amazing.
It grows so fast that he has to trim his corals almost once a month, or I bump him with the magnet when I'm trying to clean the glass.
Well, and with connectivity, the other thing about it is that for if you're going Ecotec, you can have everything synced. Mm-hmm. You can have in the evenings when you're going to feed your corals, your return pump slows down, your circulation pump speeds up, your lights start to dim, and all have that orchestrated effect together. And if you're going high-end, high-tech, it's pretty darn cool.
It's hard to beat that.
Like whenever someone starts talking about that sort of like specificity and stuff, I think of that scene in like Minority Report where they're going through all the like the files and stuff.
Yeah. And those meticulous people that are doing tanks like that. Yeah. It makes it that much cooler. They have the full control over their little universe.
It does. Summing up some of the things that I think we've talked about. Lighting is about what do you want that light to do?
Right.
Do you want it to shimmer or do you want it to grow acropora?
Right. Do you just want to make your fish look pretty?
And that's a valid reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I guess the remaining question to me is how do you save money on lights? Because it is probably this most singularly expensive aquarium purchase that a lot of people aren't thinking about when they're like, a fish tank would be fun.
Yeah. You gotta spend the money for the light that's gonna do what you want it to do.
For the amount of time that you want it to do that.
For the amount of time that you want it to do. Right. So, you know, maybe that was a little like twisted, complicated, convoluted way to come to that conclusion. And maybe it's a little obvious. But one of my jokes is the $25 Ferrari.
Yeah.
You know, I want a cheap light that's going to grow acroporas and keep them nice. The blue ones I want to be crisp blue.
Yeah.
I want a $25 Ferrari.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that anyone listening needs to keep in mind here. Like, there's an entire market out there, and you've talked about like four brands.
Yeah, right.
These are the brands that we use. These are the brands that we like, and we've tested. That's why we're talking about these ones.
Right.
We don't have the money, time, or space to test literally everything on the market.
That's the takeaway lesson, I think. We talked about that you can look at the numbers and yeah, they'll tell you something, but they're not going to tell you everything. Seeing somebody long-term grow what you want to grow with this particular light is really the only way to know for sure, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. My advice on how to save money would be to consider lighting from the start. If I know somebody wants to set up a budget high-tech planted aquarium, I would say go for a shallower tank. Mm-hmm. And then you could probably do high-tech with a true lumen. I mean, if it's a shallow enough tank, you're gonna
get
more
6 inches.
Right, six inches, yeah. Then sure, you could probably grow whatever you wanted with a true lumen from 6 inches away. Yeah. If you're a 55 is the absolute worst tank to light because you have length and it's narrow and
it's deep.
And yeah. It's deep.
Yeah. And it's deep. So a single true lumen is going to do virtually nothing for the bottom of a 55-gallon tank.
And a Kessel is going to light the walls.
Yeah. And you would need at least two. So now it's $500 to light the bottom of that tank for high tech. So think about what you want to do with the tank and how you're going to light it from the very beginning and not as an afterthought.
See, that's a way to frame it that I did not consider because it's shocking to me how often I have people come in with a used aquarium asking me how they can do something a certain way. And I'm like, that is not the right tank for what you're trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I got this used 55 off Craigslist and how do I set up a reef in it? And well, it doesn't have an overflow. Now you need these really expensive lights. Now you need, so that $20 tank has cost you much more.
I think we should do a couple of podcasts and YouTube videos on how to do a 55-gallon aquarium reef tank, full reef.
Yeah.
With no overflow. Because it could be done and it could be done pretty well.
Yeah. You just have to make good choices from
the
start.
Make good choices from the start. You know, how do you save money on lights for your aquarium? Make good choices from the start.
Yeah.
Yep. Do the research.
And
ask lots of questions. Holy cow. Yeah.
And set a budget and be realistic about it. Yeah. Don't close your eyes on, well, I bought soil for my tank. I bought this and that for my tank. And now what do I do about lights? I don't know. Well, a Twin Star doesn't go on every Twin Star doesn't go on a rimmed tank. Every Kessel doesn't go on a rimmed tank. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to plan out the whole thing.
Plan it out. And know what you want that light to do. And buy the light that does what you want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we just kind of touched the surface of aquarium lighting. We're probably going to need to do some planet-specific talks and some reef-specific talks and go into it a little deeper and maybe make Charles do some science-y videos about it.
I would like to say that we've barely illuminated this topic.
Good job. I like that.
Hopefully we reassured some people that it's just as confusing to us as it is to you, but we've done that research to know what works and what doesn't.
And that's why we stick to the ones we like.
Yeah. And we're pretty loyal to the ones we love.
Yes. Well, come on into the gallery and check some of those lights out. See them in person. We'll be glad to demonstrate them for you and show you all the complicated goodness that they provide.
And for those of you who are a little farther away, we do have a lot of that stuff online, but let me know if there's anything you're looking for. Questions, send them to podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com. Even if it's not about this, we're going to do some Q&A at the beginning of these episodes. So what questions do you have? We'd love to talk about them and discuss them.
Sounds good. And always, let's have lots of fun and keep those hands wet.